The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this Tuesday afternoon. Guys got a little Korean baseball on right now. Top of the first, no score. I can't even tell who's playing.
On ESPN?
Yep. Thought remember, my ESPN. Team is the Doosan Bears. Chase, your team is Samsung Lions. And Willie's team is the Loaded Giants. So I don't even know I don't know if one of our teams is playing or not. Third base coach right now currently giving a sign with a mask on. First base coach as well. Let's bring in Greg Wyshynski. We always enjoy our conversations with him. He wrote a big piece along with Emily Kaplan on ESPN.com about the future of the NHL and where all this is going, whether it's a playoff format, practice plans, draft debate, and a lot more. Greg, how you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Yeah, we do that Monday news roundup each week to just kind of like catch ourselves up and catch everybody else up where things kind of stand at the beginning of the week. The NHL typically has a board of governors or GM meeting on a Monday, and then they have a meeting with their get ready to play committee on Wednesdays. It's actually being held today this week. So it's a good way to just kind of like see where things stand in what is admittedly an ever-changing situation.
But why a picture of the United Center of all the arenas? Why that one?
Well, the beautiful thing about it is that apparently Chicago is a tremendously polluted city, because most of the comments about the photo was that somebody should get up there and power wash the roof.
It is a little dirty and dingy.
Yeah.
So where do you think all of this going? We've already talked today where Major League Baseball and the owners have put together kind of, you know, what they have passed along to the Players Association to agree on, counter with, debate, who knows where this is going. The NBA has opened up their facilities. Some players are starting to trickle in on the NBA front. Where is this going on the NHL side of things?
Well, I mean, I think that incrementally it's going to look a lot like the NBA. You know, there are places around the league right now where they could return to training facilities right now. But then there are places around the league where that's not going to happen and can't happen because of the restrictions in place. I live in Santa Clara County, California, for example, where San Jose is located, and we're in lockdown until the end of the month. So there's no way for the Sharks to even use that facility right now. So, you know, the inconsistency across the board is something the NHL is dealing with. I can say that one of the things that's being discussed behind the scenes is a factor that you don't have to deal with in the NBA, which is ice. And the idea that some teams might be able to go back to their practice facilities and start skating again and maybe practicing in small groups again while other teams can't get back on skates is a real big issue. And it's one that the league might have to actually address, where if you have teams that are able to go back, use their training equipment, get treatment for injuries, that sort of thing at those facilities, they may not be able to get back on the ice. There may be an edict that says you can go there and use the exercise bikes, but you can't get on the ice because not all the teams are able to, and they want to keep the playing field even.
Interesting. Yeah, how do you work around that? What do you
do? You skate at midnight. there's a billion
secret
ways
skates
around it. But to speak to your point, though, I mean, like, as far as the season and stuff like that goes, what we know right now is, you know, hopefully a return to training facilities by the end of the month. They're still talking about the necessity of a few weeks of camp of some sort before they come back and play. And when they do come back and play, it's increasingly looking like it will not be regular season games, which always seemed pretty pie in the sky anyway. But they were definitely doing it in order to satisfy the things that teams needed with regard to their local broadcasting contracts, local sponsorship contracts. But the idea that you're going to force, you know, guys on the Detroit Red Wings to come back and play, you know, 12 games in a completely lost season during a pandemic was kind of a little bit beyond the pale. So it looks like we're not going to do the regular season, at least at this juncture. That could change. And the talk has been what the playoff format they jump into could be. 24 teams on the table, 16 teams on the table, 20 teams is on the table as well.
We talked. We spoke with David Poyle here recently, and I asked him about if he was watching the NFL virtual draft, and he said absolutely, and his staff was watching, and of course the league was watching just to see how the NFL would pull this off. How do you think? What do you think that we know that the draft, when it's supposed to be, do you think it's going to go off at the same time at the towards the end of June? No matter what the decision is, how do you think that's going to play out?
It's a good question. I had some conflicting information on that in the last week. I had a couple of real good NHL sources tell me that the draft and when that's going to be held was very much tied to what they decide to do with regard to the restart of the season. Meaning that if they were able to move it up a little bit and maybe put the draft after the season, they would do that. Maybe if they had to do the season a little bit deeper into the summer, they would stick with the idea of doing the draft before the season, which is something that they've been debating for the last 2 weeks and have sent a memo to teams detailing exactly how that would work and making their arguments about. It is 100% going to be a virtual draft like the NFL. The argument the NHL makes about why you would hold it before restarting the season is to kind of use it as a jumping off point for fans, to give them something to talk about, to give their broadcast partners something to report on and build up to. I mean, NBC apparently has committed more resources and time to leading up to the draft and previewing the draft than they ever have before, if in fact it happens before the season. So we'll see what happens. We know for sure it's going to be virtual, but the timing of it still is very much up in the air.
Still a lot to hash out for sure. Greg Wyshynski is with us from ESPN. So, Greg, before we get back to some of the issues at hand here, you guys did a nice piece, you and Emily, on the 1989 Stanley Cup Final, which is one we reference a lot with Terry Crisp, one of our colleagues here. It was quite interesting, and I like the way you guys went about it. You're not going over necessarily the play-by-play, but you recap some of the great moments from that. A lot of great styles back in 1989. And Terry Crisp, you should ask him someday to talk about the blazer he wore that day and what happened to it.
It's a tremendous blazer, and there's a great moment in the third period, and actually the third period of that game is what we focused on because that's the one that's available on ESPN Plus. You can pop it on and marinate in some classic hockey for an hour. It's pretty cool. There's a moment in that third period when Crispy loses his mind. Russ Cortinall from the Canadiens takes a full-on run at Mike Vernon, the goalie for the Flames, and you just see Terry like getting on the bench and he's pointing and he's just screaming at Cortinall and the referees to maybe kick this guy out of the game for intending to injure his goaltender in the third period of a Stanley Cup final game. It's a real fiery moment, but that was a fun one to watch, man. There's a ton of familiar names and Hall of Fame players on both of those teams and guys who would go on to, you know, win cups in different cities too. I mean, like Montreal's got guys, you know, obviously Patrick Roy went on and won a few with Colorado and Claude Lemieux and Guy Carboneau and players like that. So it was really cool to look back at it and also to kind of apply, like you said, we do a weekly viewer's guide that has different categories and also, you know, look at some of the talents in that game and say, you know, who would transfer to 2020 in this NHL? I mean, I think a lot of people think Theo Fleury, who was 5'6", but could score a billion goals, would be a guy that could thrive under the current rules. But it's always cool to look back and then also kind of compare eras.
It is great, honestly, and to see how the game evolves. There's a lot to learn there. And also the entertainment of how the styles change. And I noticed you guys made the great comparison, the apt comparison with Lanny McDonald's mustache and Steve Underwood's I was surprised to see that in a hockey column, but just of course that was a news story here, Steve Underwood stepping down with the Titans. But you could not help but notice the comparison of the mustache.
Yeah, man, I got to admit, like, I wasn't cognizant of Underwood's facial hair until he stepped down and that picture started circulating. But I mean, it looked like someone walked in to their local cosmetic surgeon's office, and they're like, "I'd like some lip fillers," and they're like, "What would you like?" And they're like, "Chinchilla," is what it looked like. It was pretty awesome. It's an impressive bit of facial hair.
Greg, you mentioned the different possibilities, right? And for a Predator follower, they all are quite intriguing. 16 teams, 20 or 24. That all could mean slightly different things for Nashville and where they fit, even though they would fit into all three. So if I get this right, let's say you had a first round of the 7 versus 10 and the 8 versus 9 in a 20-team field. In theory, the Predators could play a 2 out of 3, lose, and they would be done. So you would have all of this build up to play as few as 2 games. Is that possible, or would there be some games leading up to that?
The players would like some games leading up to it. That's one of the reasons why kind of a restarted regular season made a little bit of sense in with regard to not just completely jumping into a playoff game. Connor McDavid of the Oilers famously said a few weeks ago that, if you threw the Oilers into a playoff series with the Flames straight away after this break, you'd end up with a bunch of AHL players by the end of the series because everybody would be so banged up and injured. So in theory, you'd like to get some games in, but you might not be able to. And yeah, it seems like the play-in series or play-in games would be a best of three, just because of the time limitations. And some of the modeling that they're talking about, because remember, this is all going to happen in theory at 4 different centrally located arenas around the country. And you're going to have, 6 teams on site. One of the theories is that you make little mini tournaments within those packs of 6 teams, where potentially 2 teams get a bye, and then the other 4 teams are playing a series against each other. So there's a lot of different modeling going on, but in theory, yeah, those opening round games, if they expand the playoffs, if you're not one of the top 2 teams in your divisions or in the conferences, chances are you're going to be playing a 3-game play-in series of some sort.
Is there a way they could get creative if you wanted to reduce the pool to 20 or 24 teams and have some sort of round robin or something, a precursor to the actual tournament to fill those needs, as you were saying, Greg, so you're not diving in to the deep end and playing these games that have the highest stakes to where the games count and we get the entertainment, we get the buildup, and players can play some games that count on the standings, count on the official stats, but they're not playoff games, per se.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, it could be games that count for stats, could be exhibition games. I think one of the problems that you run into is if they count in some way, shape, or form, let's say against the standings, are you basically rewriting the regular season schedule? And you know, is that fair if a team had a bunch of non-playoff teams in their last 10 games of the season and all of a sudden have to play playoff teams just because of what arena they're playing in, or things like that? There's a lot of different variables, and the bigger issues are that, yeah, you're completely right. The players want to get a couple games in before the playoffs start, and then the issue is, how do we make that happen?
Talking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, covers the NHL for them. I read your article, too, about the American Hockey League that announced that their season was done. They were not going to be resuming. Now, you have to assume that some of those players would be on NHL rosters to help with injury concerns there. But what do you think this means for the future of the American League?
The American League seems like it's on solid footing as far as its franchises go. Everybody I've talked to doesn't seem to have too much concern about some of these teams disappearing for next season, which is good news. But it's a very gate-driven league, even more so than the NHL. There's one estimate that says that upwards of 85% of the revenue comes from attendance. So when you are dealing with something like that, the overall message I've gotten from people from the AHL and doing that story is it's obviously not going to come back until there's some way to get fans back in the building. And getting fans back in the building is going to be a real tricky proposition. I mean, it's It's what does it look like? I've written a couple of articles about this in the last 2 weeks about are they going to cap attendance, you know, for social distancing? Are they going to have to take people's temperatures when they walk in? Will they require masks for all the fans? What technology is going to exist to try to eradicate COVID-19 in the air or to figure out who's got it when they walk into the building? There's all of these questions that are facing these teams. But one of the things from the story today that really stood out for me was two different team owners from the AHL telling me, we may have to rethink the demographics of our fan base. Like a team in Utica said their primary ticket holder base is between the ages of 45 and 65. Well, he's thinking, the owner's thinking, well, maybe those people aren't coming back anytime soon if they're concerned about COVID-19, if they're obviously susceptible to the disease in ways that a younger fan isn't. So maybe the demographics shift for who's coming to these games. And if that's the case, that's a lot of older fans that spend a lot of money on season tickets and things like that, that all of a sudden might be taken out of the equation, and younger fans that are spending a little less money all of a sudden are filling those seats. So a lot of those questions are being answered and dealt with behind the scenes by every team, both in the American Hockey League and the National Hockey League.
I know this could be a little bit of an outside-the-box question, but just something that I've thought about. With, let's say that the rest of this, you know, if they come back, there are no fans, and then next year it's even limited on how many fans can be in there. Could you see the leagues as a whole, or the teams maybe shifting some of their resources that they might have in game ops or on a game night for in-arena experience, and trying to put some of those people to make the broadcast experience a little bit better, because they know so many people are going to be sitting at home tuning in, watching their games?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to rethink the way that they present these games, and I think that's going to start this summer if they restart the season. I mean, you're going to see those games delivered in ways we've never seen before. An empty arena affords them the opportunity to create different camera angles. It creates opportunities for different ways to deliver audio. I mean, we were just talking this morning on our editorial call at ESPN, the idea of, you know, what if somebody takes the lesson from the Jordan documentary and runs an uncensored hockey feed on a channel, and then the clean hockey feed on another channel? Like, like, who's to say you couldn't do that?
That'd be cool.
But you're right. Like, if you can't pack the arena with 17,000 fans, and most of your fans are going to be watching the game at home, you're going to have to rethink how you present the game to those fans, and you have to rethink how you keep those fans engaged beyond the games being played. And, you know, there's teams already thinking about ways they can do that, even by using video games in some cases, to keep fans engaged beyond the game being played. It's a real fascinating question, and I think it all does come down to how they approach the attendance issue, whether they have to cap it, and then also whether or not people come back. But I'll say this, and I've been told by this by a couple of team officials. I think while a lot of us assume that people are going to be hesitant to come back to any place where you're shoulder to shoulder with 17,000 other people, we have been so in tune with trying to follow the regulations by medical experts, by our local governments, that the moment there is sort of an all clear, I mean, or at least we can get back to normal kind of thing, I have a feeling that people are going to take that as a message that you can go back to an arena. There doesn't seem to be a lot. There seems to be less concern on the parts of teams than I might have anticipated for fans not coming back, because I think they believe that when they have the ability to come back, they'll just come back. Now, that doesn't speak to the economic issues, which is a whole different story with the amount of unemployment and stuff. But from a you know, personal health and safety perspective, these teams seem a little bit more optimistic than I thought they were about people coming back if, in fact, the regulations are lifted.
Where I'm at right now, a lot of things, it's looser here than in Davidson County, which is Nashville. I agree with you 100%. I mean, I've been telling the story to these guys in our audience for the last week and a half. There's times I go out here and it looks like everything is completely normal. I mean, I think a lot of what you said is, you know, people are just, they were dying to get back out, and look, we got to do this the right way. But I think probably people with less hesitation than we really thought, especially when we were having these conversations 4 and 6 weeks ago.
Right. And then of course, the thing that you really got to worry about is that the right decisions were made and that there's not a gigantic, you know, second wave of this stuff, which is really the NHL's concern in trying to get the season restarted in the summer. I asked around because I had heard from a few people, why not just wait until September or October to restart the season when you might be able to get fans in the building? And the answer back was, look, we don't have any idea what's going to be happening in September and October. You know, if we wait to do it and there's a second wave, well, then we might as well cancel this season and next season, right? So, like, it's all a mystery. And I give everybody behind the scenes credit for trying to model everything and noodle through everything and think of every possibility, because I mean, day to day, I can't wrap my brain around what might actually happen. You know what I mean? So fact that they're coming up with all these concepts, I think, is admirable.
Good stuff as always, Greg. We appreciate the visit. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN and ESPN.com, and we do appreciate him joining us. We'll come back and discuss some things you heard on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Many local businesses here in Middle Tennessee are still open and ready to serve you during these uncertain times. Help them out by visiting rocknashville.com for delivery, pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and more. We got this, Nashville. Support our local businesses. Special thanks to Greg Wyshynski again for joining us. What do you make of what he said at the end, that he has talked to some folks, team officials, that maybe they feel a little bit better about when there is the opportunity to open up the doors and allow fans, even on a limited basis or whatever, however it's constructed, that they feel better the fans will indeed come back. Do you guys agree, disagree? What do you think?
Well, I think he almost caught himself. I think that the willingness will be there. I think it's the economic situation that will become the bigger challenge over time. I could be wrong about that. They might be equal challenges, but I think they're at least equal in my mind.
Are you saying fans, the money will not be there because of the situation we've all been in for months? Is that what, I'm not sure where you're going with that.
Yeah, I think there will be a number of people that would have a limited disposable income.
Sure.
And, you know, if you're making your own budget, your budget may not be what it once was to be able to go to hockey games or basketball games or football games.
Yeah. Right. That's fair, but we're also talking about a limited number anyway. I mean, right? We've been kind of, see, every model we've seen is like 25% to 30% capacity, right? Somewhere in that range. So we're talking, you know, that number to 17,000 people. So you're not asking 17,000 people, which have been showing up for every home game for a long time now, 150 games or more now.
Yeah, I do wonder how many, you know, as you guys bring this up, how many people will, you know, that are season ticket holders, that they've had that money available so they could buy a season ticket for whatever sport, all of a sudden now they don't, and are there going to be conversations of, hey, I gotta get out of this, I either gotta sell them or, you know, give them back, or however that process would work. You know, this is unprecedented, this is a new situation. I mean, I know once you're committed, you're kind of committed and you have to figure it out, but I do wonder if those conversations are going to happen, you know, between teams and between season ticket holders, that will reduce the number of fans that'll be there too. So that's where my mind went when you guys started having this conversation. So I'm curious of that.
So let's leave out the economic part of it. Just the safety or fear or what have you of returning. Where do you think that is? What's the level of that in a fan base? I think I'll tell you where my head went is what I brought up there. I mean, I've just seen it here. I mean, I just feel like there's a lot of people, and I don't want to say they're not fearful, although, you know, I would say some of the people's actions I've seen out, I do question whether they are fearful or they believe in any of this. So I do know that is going on, but I just don't get the vibe in down here where things are just starting to loosen up, how it feels, dare I say, very loose. I mean, it's very congested. A lot of people out and about. A lot of people moving around. And I just kind of feel like by the time we get to this point, you know, we're talking months and months. I just think there's going to be a lot of people that are more than willing to walk right back in an arena and watch sports live. That's kind of how I feel.
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, I try to be careful how I word this, but I'm just going to say it. I get the sense of there are a lot of people that just go, all right, well, this is just another thing we got to deal with. It'll go away eventually. And it's just not that simple. I mean, I know I have seen on Snapchat and different social media of people that in Nashville that they've gone out, and whether it's out to eat or something, and they're on top of each other. I mean, they're right next to each other, and there's not social distancing. And that's my fear, that these types of things are going to happen, and it's going to set us all back. So and you can make your own decisions, whatever, but I don't want to go back to this. I don't want to, even though I have been fine doing the show from home, you know, I haven't seen you guys except for a Zoom call in 2 months. You know, I miss being, there's a big difference in being in a studio and doing a show. I miss my coworkers. I miss my friends. And I don't want to have to go back to how it was at the beginning of this, or even worse, where you just can't leave at all because certain people can't behave. You know what
well,
I mean?
But what Greg said in there is that, which was interesting part of, okay, well then just go the safer route and just call it a season and just prepare for 2020, 2021 season. And then he brought up, well, there's no idea to know what September and October, when training camp and the regular season is to begin, what it's going to look like, what it's going to mean at that point. So how do you, when you just said that, you don't want to go back. Well, of course, but none of us know, right? That's the toughest part about all of this. I think it was well said with one of the guests that we had on. Certain things happen, you know, tragic tornadoes, the flood, things that we've talked about that have happened in our market. Well, when they're done, they're done. Then we can address it and figure out how to tackle it and rebuild it. But we know we have answers, right? Because it's done. It's over with. There's still question marks. This is like Qbert constantly. We don't know. There's always a question mark above our head of what this means. We try to figure out how to cope with it, how to deal with it, what's the best plan of action, what's the best thing to do moving forward, but still with always the question mark over our head. We don't know. As we've said, every time we walk out of this house, our homes, we're at risk. I mean, whether it's just a trip to the grocery store, nothing's off limits. You're going to be at risk, and so there's always going to be the question mark over our head for a good while. So, you know, how do you handle that? What do you do about that? I mean, you're right. None of us want to go back, but, I mean, could you – what do you think – how do you think it's going to play out, Chase? I mean, none of us know, but, I mean, we won't know, too, until we go out and we start trying to figure out ways around it. Is that fair to say?
Like, the trial and error. Trial and error.
Trial and error, right.
Yeah. No, that's very, very
fair. The error could be very costly. That would be my concern.
Bingo. That's the delicate balance in all of this. And let me say, we don't know where the line is. I think that we're all trying to find what the line is, and it's very easy for people to just go, all right, well, we're free again, so let's be normal. I look at it as go live your life, but be cautious. Like, if you don't have to go sit inside a restaurant and eat, then don't. Just wait a little bit. See how it plays out. That's what I'm doing. That's what Roman's doing. I mean, he's waiting out with you guys, and let's not go and sit in the restaurant when we can just get it to go and go home if that's the safe route right now. As things ease up and you kind of get a sense of, all right, it looks better.
Yeah, but it's not safe. It's still not safe. I mean, that's the thing. First of all, it's going to be costly in both situations. Yeah. Staying in is costly. Going out is costly. It's all equals the same thing, unfortunately. Right? It's all costly. So what do you do?
I keep coming back to, how do we find the ways to live with the virus while minimizing risk? And I keep coming back to, if we have to come up with a way that when we go into a place that has a lot of people and people are going to be interacting, how do we test those people right there to at least give ourselves a better feeling that, okay, I may not know everything. I don't know if we can 100% guarantee that everybody here in this room or on this field for a practice is virus-free, but at least we did this. At least we took these measures, you know, whether that be testing that we can come up with by then or at least taking people's temperatures, things like that. That's the toughest part about this virus is you can be symptom-free, feeling fine, and be infecting people. And that's and it spreads so quickly. So the answers aren't easy. But that's my general answer, I think, as we look down the road a few weeks, a few months, is how do you minimize the risk while you try to live as much as we can, I emphasize the verb live, with the virus? I mean, we can live if we all sit inside all day, but we know that we can't do that forever, right? But so how do we attack it? Everything that we do has got to be built towards that.
Yeah.
Living with the virus while minimizing the risk, knowing that we can't eliminate the risk.
Yep.
Not for a while anyway.
That's what everybody's trying to figure out, how to live with it, knowing that it's not going away anytime soon. And as scary as it is, I mean, we've done that. Like there are different things that you learn to live with, but this is so widespread, and I was talking to somebody the other day of it's kind of like, well, if something's happening in another state or another country, it's like, okay, well, you can get away from it. Well, you can't with this. It's all over. So it's just, it's scary, and the unknown scares people a lot, but it's, as you said, learning to live with it.
And there's unknowns. There's also an unknown that doesn't scare people. That's why I go back to, there's enough proof out there that there's plenty of people that'll sign up to,
right.
So to go back. Yeah, I mean, as we've been talking about on the show. Right?
That's going to be a problem. We may have to even have police and you know, authorities control the reckless people, right? For their own good, for our own good, for everybody's own good.
Well, you can't control if the leagues decide that they are going to open up. That's already been controlled and determined. If they decide that it's okay to let a certain amount of fans.
Oh yeah, no, I get that. I get that. But I'm saying if there's a certain percentage of our population that is, as you said, Chase, just trial and error, let's just go, that could ruin it for everybody else that's trying to do this in stages and get to the point that's realistic.
I've said this, you know, I'm at the age now where, you know, I miss going out with you know, Marquise and I, we've hit Broadway a couple times, and I miss that, and I hope to do that again. But
Broadway's hit you guys back.
It's hit back. Yeah. It is hit back. But I'm also at the age too where just sitting at the bar, watching a game, you know, that's what I think I miss the most. Now that I'm 32 years old, I miss that part of it. But I've lived without it. I mean, I've sat in my man cave watching old games, drinking a beer, and it's like, okay, this is what I'm doing right now. Eventually, I'll venture out, but I'm not going to right off the bat, because that's the personal choice that I'm making, that I want to see how it plays out, and I just want to play it safe, because what I've been doing the last 2 months is working for me, so I'm going to just keep doing it.
Marquise, what's the pick update? Where are we at on the pick right now?
The pick?
Are you in the same stage?
Let's see.
Same pick stage?
No, the pick's getting bigger. Pick is getting bigger. Because, look, I went to the store to buy a 4-pack of picks, which, you know, I didn't think I needed all 4, but apparently I do, because one pick gets small, and it's so small you can't even comb your hair that good. So I had to get the second big pick that was in the package. So luckily I had that, but it's bad.
So just for people who are like, what are you talking? We're not talking about American Pickers, the TV show. We're talking about for Marquise and his hair. He says the picks are getting bigger because the hair just keeps growing.
Yes.
You've got more than Herm. You've seen the Herm Edwards. I brought this up to you. You've got more than Herm, right?
We're getting about the same. We're about the
really?
Same. Oh, yeah.
I was thinking that when Herm was talking about it, I was thinking he and Marquise could be on the same level.
See, I wear a hat a lot, so my hair gets flattened. But when I get home, like when I take the hat off, it's and then I just start picking it out again, you know, because you got to do that every day, you know, but it's bad. I said that I'm not going, if it's not safe for me to go to the barbershop, it's definitely not safe for me to go to a restaurant. So I'm not going out to eat nowhere until I get this haircut.
I've decided with the beard, I'm using the, you know, the Predators are in the virtual Western Conference final right now. So it's the playoff beard. It's my virtual playoff beard, even though it's not virtual. Okay.
What's funny is I tried to grow like an afro when I was in like middle school because I wanted to get Allen Iverson braids. That's exactly what I called him. I said that was exactly, like, I want Allen Iverson braids. And this was, I was in middle school, so this is back in, like, 2000, 2001. And, yeah, it didn't get that far. It got to where it's at right now, so it didn't get that far.
Are braids painful?
Yes.
Yeah, they look painful.
Yes, because you got to, they are twisting your hair.
Yes.
Like, it's painful. Because I try to do twist at one point.
And what if somebody like,
no,
slaps
thanks.
You on the head, like even like pats you? Doesn't that hurt?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So, no. I was like, you know what, Allen Iverson, you're cool. I'm just going to stick with the Kobe Fro for a while. And I stuck with the Kobe Fro, the number 8 Kobe Fro.
All right. We will come back and wrap up Tuesday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. Jerry Stackhouse has lessened his staff by a couple of coaches. We'll tell you about that and more. There's some news on the Logan Ryan front. And I'm going to actually throw out something to you guys. I'm going to test you and see if you can get it. And I'm going to say you can't, because I was shocked when I saw this from Pro Football Focus. All that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Looks like Jerry Stackhouse has trimmed his staff down a little bit. Two members of his staff will not return for a second season. The Commodores have parted ways with associate head coach David Grace and senior advisor to the head coach Ricardo Patton. Vanderbilt confirming this, does not know presently what will happen with the vacancies, but that trims Stackhouse's staff now down to 38 coaches, so that gets him below 40. Now
you stole my line. I was thinking with the same line.
I was wondering about that. If, you know, now
this darn pandemic, he's gonna, now his staff's below 40.
Well, it's not even that. I was just wondering with the regime change, you know, if there would be some changes to the loaded basketball staff that they had over there. And that answers my question. But
well, I'm sure that's been brought up, right? Like, yeah. You have a massive staff. Now, in all seriousness, he's still got 10 coaches. They had 12, so he's got it down to 10 with that news. What do you make of that? Anything stand out to you? I mean, obviously Ricardo Patton is a guy that we're very familiar with, but David Grace and Ricardo Patton out. What's your initial thoughts?
Well, Ricardo Patton was one of the last guys in.
Yep.
So that one doesn't surprise me as much, but Grace was one of the first guys. In fact, he was the first that was hired by Jerry Stackhouse. Now he was the guy that had more of the conventional track record in the college game. So that one I'm curious about. To me, he's got to be replaced. You need somebody that has that skill set on your staff. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he was supposed to be more of the ace recruiter, the lead recruiter. Ricardo Patton, I think, was supposed to be in on that part of it too. And, you know, we won't be the first nor the last to make the running joke, I'm sure, in basketball circles of, oh, wow, what are you going to do now? You only have 10 people on your staff now. But I do think Grace has to be replaced. I don't know that there's somebody on his staff that has that type of experience. Not that I can tell you whether Grace did a good job or not. He wasn't there long enough to really make his mark as a recruiter. So that's a tricky one. I also wouldn't be stunned at some point if that staff shrinks a little bit more before it's all over, because I just keep coming back to the same thing. Do you really need that many people on your staff?
Especially honestly, in these times, right? Things are going to change. I mean, you're just not going to have the budget that you had before. I mean, that's what we've been talking about. I mean, especially in these times. I mean, it was an eyebrow raiser when it happened, when things were normal. Now, you know, when things are completely different, I guess we shouldn't be surprised at all. And I don't disagree with you. I kind of thought the same thing. Like, I doubt it's probably – these are the last two names we're going to hear. unfortunately. I kind of feel like that's where it's going.
I do wonder, not just Vanderbilt, but just across, you know, all sports, that, you know, what you're going to start seeing there when it comes to those types of cuts, of whether it's coaching staffs or, you know, assistants.
I wonder, too. I think that's a great question,
yeah,
long term, is with the far-reaching part of this, what we're about to head into, and we're still just beginning, right, in terms of the whole economic curve of the whole thing. Are we going to start seeing a day where you don't have $2 million offensive coordinators in football, and you can't pay your basketball coach $4 million a year? And, you know, maybe even at the top levels of the professional ranks, that your best, maybe your best NBA player can't make $25 million a year, you know, in the max. Maybe all of that is going to have to come down some, at least for a while.
Well, if there's no college football season, the answer on the college football front is yes, that will absolutely happen.
And then what do you do about all the people that have guaranteed contracts? You know, you
right.
just signed a contract,
yep.
you know, a coach who makes $5 million a year and
you
just had a great year has signed a five-year extension to get that $5 million a year for the next five, 6 years. And now we go into this period where all of a sudden it's a game changer. How does the school pay that coach that money? What do you do about that?
You mean Jimbo Fisher, who's still got like $60 million left on his contract?
That's a great example. There's a perfect example right there of, you know, an extremely high pay coach. He's one of the highest, if not the highest, right?
Sure.
So
that's
what do
a
you
fantastic
do?
Question.
And his money is, quote, guaranteed. That was the thing that you saw about his contract when he signed it. That's how they lured him away. We'll guarantee your
10
contract.
10 years, $75 million, all of it guaranteed.
Yeah, and
so
you,
does,
but
does
you
somebody
can't...
come knocking on his door a year or two down the road as we're still trying to recover from this and say, "Coach, who's kidding who? Man, we got to talk about this, or else we don't have X, Y, Z programs on our campus."
Yeah, and the ball's in his court, and he looks like a jerk if he says no. Like, you're going to pay me what I agreed to, but there's no precedent for it. That's the problem. That's why I think it's such a great question you brought up, because I don't. There's no language in a contract that would cover this. At least I don't think there is. I mean, this is a...
You don't think there was COVID-19 language in his contract?
But is this some sort of... I mean, do you have like a... I don't even know what you classify it as. Like, natural disaster?
If a pandemic ever hits this country, we are not, you know, we're not responsible for the rest of your contract.
Right.
I doubt that language is in there.
That's what I mean. I mean, lawyers are smart, but they're not that smart to have, you know, just the craziest things that could happen. So I don't know how you address
fair. It. And what's fair? Because his value, the coach's value in many cases, is going to be still huge, right? A huge value. You need a good coach. You want a good coach. But how do you address that? That's an impossible situation.
Now, some other news was on the NFL front. We saw earlier today that it seemed like the Jets were very interested in signing Logan Ryan to a one-year deal. Still haven't seen anything on that front officially. So that was many, many hours ago. That was back at the beginning of the show, and so still nothing new on that front. I did see this from Pro Football Focus, and I thought it was interesting. Highest pressure percentage in the last decade, so 2010 to 2019, there were four players that had the best pressure percentages on defense. Who do you think those four players were in the last decade that we just came out of? Who do you think would be on that list? Highest pressures.
Well, I will bite at the low-hanging fruit.
Okay.
Because I heard Trey Wingo throw that stat out there.
Oh, really?
In terms of Jadeveon Clowney. He said, don't look at sacks. Look at pressure percentage or whatever you just said. Some version of that.
It's pressure percentage.
I will guess that.
It's only four players. Clowney is not one of them. My guess is didn't play long enough. Hasn't played long enough, maybe.
Okay, but it's a percentage. So I don't know
true.
What the minimum amount
right, there's got to be a minimum. I don't
have
the criteria.
Minimum, right?
Yeah.
Qualifier.
Yep.
If I came in for one play and I got, like Rudy, got pressure on the quarterback and sacked him, I would have my percentage would be 100% pressure percentage. Right. So Rudy, I think, has 100%, right?
Yes. No, he
does. But he only played one play, so he probably doesn't qualify. So,
well, this is on the pro side too, so.
But you said it covers the last. It covers.
So Rudy does not count then.
He does not.
It covers 2010 to 2020. That's what you're saying though, right?
2010 to 2019.
Yeah.
This past season.
Ooh, I like this question.
This is Ray Lewis?
How about Von Miller?
Ooh, Von Miller.
Von Miller's number one. 17%.
I'm patting myself on the back. You
That's
can't
good.
See it, but I'm patting myself.
There you
on
go.
Back.
No, you deserve it.
A virtual pat? It. Give it's yourself a virtual pat.
I'll give him a virtual pat. There you go. Okay, so Von Miller's number one. We're looking for three more. Clowney's not.
You're missing there. One real obvious one.
J.J. Watt.
Actually, that's very good guess, and believe it or not, not in the top four.
Wow.
That's a very good guess, but there's actually one other major disruptor that we identify in this league, and we have been for years. That's
why am I blanking on his name? He got traded. Mack.
Khalil Mack is not
Khalil
on the
Mack.
List.
Not on the list?
No, I know.
Surprising. Clay Matthews.
Not on the list.
Dang. Thought that was a good guess.
The guy that I'm referring to, and I thought, well, they could probably take it a couple ways. You could have said maybe Ndamukong Suh, but that's not him.
Aaron Donald
is third on the list.
Aaron Donald. That makes sense.
Joey Bosa is fourth on the list. Who's second? So Von Miller's one, Aaron Donald three, Joey Bosa four. I could let you guys guess all the way through Jared and the GM, and you still wouldn't get it. That's why
really?
I'm bringing it up.
Huh.
Because he's a former Titan.
A former Titan?
Casey?
Good guess, but no.
Boy, for this decade.
Former. You're not going to. Okay, I'm taking a shot in the dark here. Derek Morgan?
Nope.
A former Titan.
Yeah, we will probably.
Okay,
I know.
We,
like I said,
give us
let you guys guess for the next 4 hours. You wouldn't get
it. I concede that I won't get it. So give us a hint. Is it like
early
part of the decade?
CW are the initials.
Early part of the decade. Did he have more success?
You're never
going to
get it. Even with all these hints, you're never going to get it. Cameron.
Did he succeed?
Cameron Wake.
Okay, well. Yeah, well, because
that makes some sense.
Yeah, I know, but that's interesting.
That's why they signed him. That's why they signed him.
How about that? Cameron Wake
now,
is number two.
That shows you how much I associate him with the Titans.
I know, but it was still a true hint.
No, it was.
Yeah,
I mean he is a former Titan. He's not going to be remembered as a former Titan, but
so what's
it was
his percentage?
16.4%. Von Miller was 17.
If you get pressure on the quarterback 17% of the time, that's the best.
That's the
over the
best,
course of the decade.
Best in the decade had.
I wonder what the best is per season. Like what in a particular season?
All time?
No. What? Well, yeah, maybe. But what generally leads the league each year in
that's
the 20s?
That's great. I'd love to know. Let's get somebody on from Pro Football Focus and see if they can answer that.
That's good stuff. We're learning.
I'd love to know. Yep. All right, that's going to do it for our show today. Fun times. Enjoy your Tuesday. Stay safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.